Are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay, let's do it.
Bill Martinez Live, a program about current events, our culture, our values, our politics, and our future. And now, Bill Martinez.
We better stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going on. Stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's
going on. Hey, we're back with you 6 minutes after the top of the hour. Great to have you along with us, sharing a part of your day as we continue to pursue the truth. And, you know, that welcome breath of fresh air, you know, that little breath of fresh air that you're starting to feel and sense. It's called common sense. That's what's starting to surround us. I think, you know, sometimes, you know, by experience, you've heard me say this before, you know, that you have to get up on the roof, fall off the roof and realize, you know, the law of gravity still exists. And there's certain laws that exist that are very reasonable. They're common sense, the things we grew up with. But all of a sudden, I mean, this generation, this wokeism that we've been going through is taking on all the institutions and questioning everything. And it's almost like we've become totally unhinged. And it's like, wow, you know, it's like sometimes I think I'm caught in a nightmare or some suspended reality that makes no sense. And I don't know if that's the way you feel at times, but more and more, because this just doesn't add up. You know, at the end of the day, politics, forget it, has just gone over the top. It's so emotional that you can't even talk. I mean, it's like the old days when I grew up, you know, you don't talk about, you know, faith and politics. And of course, this is what we do. You know, we do talk about politics and we do talk about issues of faith because, you know, I'm of the mindset and by experience that faith should have an influence on politics. And right now, the woke, which is a small minority of wokeism, the wokeists have gotten control and said, look, we don't want any God in this deal. Get your God out of here. We can take it from here. Oh, great. Well, where were you back in the 1700s when we were putting this country together? You know, were you participating? Were you the one that was, you know, as the number one fighting military force was coming upon our land? Were you out there praying or were you out there just burning, you know, candles to some other wooden god of some sort or God only knows what you were adoring at the time? But it wasn't the divine hand of providence himself, as George Washington would say. Well, with us right now is Brigadier General and we're going to be Jim Damaris, and we're going to be talking about a harrowing story of a U.S. Air Force captain, Stephen Phillips. And Stephen is, you know, he died in action. And the general believes, and when you hear this story, you'll probably feel the same way, is that this Air Force captain should be honored with a Medal of Honor. General, welcome to the show. Good to have you with us.
Thank you. Good morning. And thanks so much for having me on today.
Well, let's talk about this hero. Air Force Captain Stephen Phillips, explain to our audience what happened and why you are leading this campaign to get him awarded the Medal of Honor.
Sure, and thanks for giving me this opportunity, because Steve's story of heroics is one that needs to be told far and wide. I'm going to take us back to the fifth Desert Storm and his 30th combat mission on February 15th of 1991. Steve and his very young wingman, Lieutenant Rob Sweet, were tasked on their most dangerous mission of Desert Storm. They were tasked to fly over 100 miles north of the Kuwaiti-Saudi border to attack Saddam Hussein's elite Republican Guards in anticipation of the pending ground war. Steve was an experienced A-10 fighter pilot and a cautious pilot by nature, but one committed to getting the job done. And so Steve and Rob flew 100 miles north and began their successful attacks against the Medina Division. And near the end of their mission, they were engaged by a surface-to-air missile site and successfully defeated the first missile shot at young Lieutenant Sweet. But they decided that it was time to roll in and attack this site. Steve rolled in and strafed, and when he came off, he cleared Rob into strafe. And unfortunately, at that time, Rob was engaged by the second surface-to-air missile shot at him, which mortally wounded his A-10 Warthog. So if you can picture this, Rob's in his A-10, hit by a surface-to-air missile, The airplane is now going down and passing through 6,000 feet. Rob has to pull the ejection handles and now has a 5-minute parachute ride down on top of the troops that he and Steve just got done bombing and strafing.
Exactly. So he's not necessarily entering friendly territory.
Oh, no, he's guaranteed not to land near friendlies. But Steve, as is what any flight lead would do, he was not willing to give up and say, well, you're going to get captured, so I'm going to go home. Wish you the best of luck.
Right.
As Rob is parachuting down over these 10,000 angry and well-equipped troops who had not suffered the wrath of the air war up until this point of the conflict, Steve did what any flight lead would do. He marks the position, he gets the coordinates, and he starts the search and rescue effort. And you would expect that of every fighter pilot. And so his initial reaction is as you'd expect. But quite frankly, it's what happens next that is the thing of heroics. So Steve has earned the right to leave, low on weapons, low on fuel. He's the only A-10 circling over these now emboldened 10,000 angry, well-equipped Iraqi troops. And he has a chance to leave, but the thought of leaving never crosses his mind. So he's in a left-hand orbit watching Sweet parachute down. He's on the radio calling in for additional forces. So he calls another flight of A-10, says, hey, guys, come south here. I need you to set up a combat air patrol to help suppress these bad guys on the ground so that we can get the search and rescue forces in there and recover Rob.
Mm-hmm.
So in a left-hand turn at 10,000 feet at 200 knots, Steve is orbiting for 3 minutes, which sounds like a lot of time, but in a combat situation is an eternity.
Mm-hmm.
And at the 3-minute point, Steve is engaged. He's being shot at by anti-aircraft artillery and surface-to-air missiles. But at the 3-minute point, he's successfully engaged and hit by a surface-to-air missile himself. And as a highly experienced A-10 fighter pilot, he's able to quickly assess that his airplane is not going to make it home. So what does he do? The first thing he does is gets on the radio and says to his inbound buddies, the two A-10s that are inbound, hey, guys, you should go back home. Too dangerous here. So picture this. His airplane is on fire. He's just watched his wingman get hit by a SAM, eject.
Wow.
His only concern right now is for these guys that are inbound. And because the A-10's not equipped with a radar, he's trying to talk their eyes onto his position.
Mm-hmm.
And at the 3-minute point, in order to help them out, he decides to dispense out of his A-10 high-visibility pyrotechnic flares. So anybody on the ground who had not yet seen him was now easily able to see his A-10 orbiting in a left-hand turn at 10,000 feet on a clear afternoon in February. So every gun and missile starts to shoot. Moments later, Steve decides that his aircraft is mortally wounded. He can no longer provide assistance to Rob. He gets on the radio, and in a voice as cool and calm as you and I are here on the radio today, he's the microphone and says, Enfield 37 is bagged as well, using the code word for the day for aircraft shot down. And unbeknownst to Rob Sweet at the time, his wingman, his friends, his fiance, his family, his fellow fighter pilots, moments later, he's engaged by another surface-to-air missile system and crashes moments later and is killed on impact about 15 miles south of where Rob lands.
General, we got to go to break. We'll pick up the story when we come back. We appreciate your time here. More from Jim Damaris.